Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. My name is Karen. I'm your host. And tonight we're going to have Linda come on. She's going to be talking to me over there. So while we're waiting on her to call, I wanted to thank all of our past guests who've been on and spoke. It's a phenomenal group of people. And I'm just honored to be able to speak with each and every one. This has definitely been a learning experience for me since we started this in November. So I hope to continue on for many, many more guests. So with that being said, we are going to welcome Linda to the show.
Good evening.
Good evening. How are you?
Good. Can you hear me quite clearly?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay.
So
good evening,
how,
everyone.
How's everything?
It seems like I can't hear you.
Phone?
Wait, I'm going to try on the other phone here.
Okay.
I was on a phone earlier. That's probably why it's... Hang on.
Yeah, just so y'all know that we've had some little bit of technical difficulty tonight, myself included. So just bear with us. And hopefully this will be just momentarily. It's not been stormy here, but the possibility is very, very possible at the moment. And if you hear any background noise, I do apologize for that because I am currently outside. I thought it would be nice to sit outside and do a show this evening from here. So you may pick up some background noise, and I apologize.
Can you hear me?
I can. Can you hear me there now?
Okay. I put the volume up. Can you hear me clearly now?
I can hear you too.
Okay, good. I shut the curtains for the dogs so they can't look outside and bark.
Oh, God.
Still daylight out here, but...
I hear it. Yeah, and I'm over here on this one.
Pardon?
Noise that everybody's probably going to hear. I said I would apologize for the background noise that everybody's probably going to hear since I decided to sit outside because it's kind of a nice evening. But I think we're expecting some rain. But so we could hear the cars in the distance. So hopefully it won't be so bad.
Yeah. No, I can't hear anything like that.
Okay, good.
Yeah, so
how's everything been going?
Am I on the air now?
You are.
Pardon?
Yes, you're on air.
Okay, I just want to say good evening to everyone that's listening. And I hope you're all doing well wherever you are in our world. Yeah, tonight I just wanted to talk about relationships, how they differ from when you're an alcoholic or... I'm sure alcoholic and drugs is the same thing. It's you'd rather pay for drugs than pay for rent.
Mm-hmm.
You know that it's one of the things that will break up a couple for sure. And I find. Had I known what I know right now, I would have kept on being single and not drink in my earlier years, and what a difference my world would be right now. But it is what it is, and the things that I had to go through to be where I'm at in my head and in my spirituality, you know, to live in peace this all the relationships I was in, you know, with a male partner or with female friends and men, you know, I had to go through those things myself to find out and take me to where I am right now on knowing who my friends are. Whereas before, I thought that everyone was my friend, you know, that, you know, I wasn't being selective of my friends. And they were mostly alcoholics and drug addicts. And as soon as I quit that, they all seemed to disappear. And it's a wonder on how I felt after. It felt like I was alone. But at the same time, you are alone when you're doing drugs or when you're drinking, because all those people that you're drinking with are just nothing but drinking buddies. They're not meant to stay in your life. And the people that did try to steer you from alcohol or drugs, I'm putting drugs in there. I wasn't a very adamant drug user. You know, I'd rather drink than do drugs. And I did have a couple of people in my life that weren't into those drugs and alcohol and would try and steer me away from alcohol, but I wouldn't listen. I wouldn't listen to that because I was so down on myself and down there, you know, close to the gutter and thinking, you know, I wasn't worthy of being like this person that didn't drink or do drugs. And pardon?
Oh, I was kidding, because you kind of cut out for a moment, and I didn't know if I lost you or not.
Oh, yeah, I'm still here. So what I'm saying about the relationships, you know, for me, that's what I grew up in is alcoholism. My parents were, my dad would come home fighting my mother and, you know, she would defend herself. Meanwhile, she was at home with us and he would come home fighting her. I was never sure about what he was fighting her for or if it was just pure guilt, spending all his paycheck on, you know, buying rounds at the bar and finding a woman and staying with a woman for the weekend or whatever. That was how he would spend his weekends and say he was at the relatives and he wasn't even there, you know, a bunch of lying. And then when there was drinking, it was at the house, you know, and it would be my dad's friends. You know, I didn't like the drinking. I would always lock my door into my bedroom. I surely didn't want anybody to accidentally be walking into my bedroom. So I'd lock my door. Because I think I was only like 12 and 13 years old. when that was happening,
mm-hmm.
when we lived in the city.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then when I was 14, you know, I started running away from home because what had happened to me when I was 10 years old, being sexually molested, that bothered me, and I didn't even know that it was bothering me by me running away from home. You know, I was just a kid, a child. I didn't know what was going on, or, you know, I couldn't explain that myself. I didn't know that it bothered me that I would just run away from home and then go and find my own friends, and, you know, thinking that I was safe with my own friends, you know, and sleeping here and there, and where I would sleep is I would wait for somebody's parents to leave, then I would go and sleep at that house while the parents were gone to work. Then I would leave before they had come home. Then just walk around at night. You know, even that was kind of scary at times. But in those days, there was hardly anybody on the streets at night. You didn't see anybody. You didn't see any homeless people walking around or anything at that time. When I was 14 and 15. Then 15, they threw me into a detention center for juveniles. Then my mom would come and get me. Then I'd do the same thing. And my relationship with my mother wasn't very good. It was very rocky. Like she'd never believe anything I said. And I think I told, I mentioned this before that, you know, because I told her what happened to me when I got molested, and she didn't believe me that my dad molested me. And she took up for my dad, and she didn't believe me. And she told everybody that I was a liar. And that was one of the things that that bothered me, that, you know, that I was labeled as a liar. Whenever somebody company came over, relatives or their friends, she would mention that I was a liar and not to believe anything I said. You know, she covered my dad's tracks. You know, I couldn't believe that. I just couldn't wrap my head around that she'd say something like that about me, her own daughter, and, you know, protect my dad, her husband. So I would, that's why I would run away. You know, I didn't feel safe in the home. And when I was at home, they didn't sleep together, so I had to sleep with my mom. So maybe she did believe me, or maybe she was just watching me that I don't run away. It was probably because, so I wouldn't run away. You know, she might have been scared that I was going to tell the world or whatever. Anyways, that's how I, my relationship was with my mother. And, you know, that's denying my truth and not believing me, that really hurt. I think I mentioned this too at the therapist when I went to the therapist the first time. She asked me which hurt the most, my mother, you know, always giving me a hard time about it, or what my dad did to me. And I said to her, it's what my mom did to me, that because she did it for a long period of time. I think she did it for like, I was 14 and I didn't go to a therapist till I was 34 or 35. But that's a long stretch of time that my mom would give me a hard time about it, even when I was in my 20s. She would still give me a hard time, and I would still keep on drinking, and she would tell me to quit drinking. And then I would think, well, you know, who the hell are mm-hmm. you to tell me? That's what I would think. You know, you didn't believe me what I told you. You know, and my dad wouldn't say very much to me at all when I was growing up. So that's one relationship. And then after I when I took the therapy the first time, she I wrote about it. I wrote a poem about it. And that's when she was mad at me. She wouldn't talk to me for 2 years. But she phoned me about, 25 times. And I wouldn't answer the phone after she called me every name in the book. Everything she called me. Anything imaginable, that's what she called me. So with the therapy that I took, I just chose to not talk to her because she was treating me like that. Excuse me. And then 2 years later, that's when she talked to me, and it was my partner that asked me to invite her to my graduation. I was graduating from this course. And I said, she won't come. And I was right, and I was a bit hurt about that. And it was I put my expectation out there that she would maybe come, you know. And she didn't. And I told my partner, I said, they told you she wouldn't come, you know. Now I just feel a bit hurt about that. You know, because I kind of expected her to, and really I didn't. So he said, well, I won't ask her anymore. I won't invite her anymore. And I said, no, she won't come. Even if you asked her yourself, she still wouldn't come, I said. Eventually she'd phone and she'd be praising my sister, and so I already had tools how to stop her from doing those things, and I would just say, well, I gotta go. And eventually when I kept doing that, stopping her, and then when she would be saying things, no offense to anybody out there, but when she would be saying, oh, well, Jesus loves you and pray to the Lord, and, you know, she'd be like that with her Catholic religion. Even that, I said, I gotta go. And I would stop her when she'd say those two things, or she'd badmouth my sisters. I would say, well, I gotta go. So eventually, when I did that to her, and before she had dementia, we were a mother and daughter again, and we were friends. She was friendlier to me. She didn't, it was like she knew my boundaries, and she knew better not to talk about praising the one sister amongst us all. That's what she did. That's what my dad did too. And we love our sister, but that's what she did to our one sister. And they praise my sister so much that right now my sister thinks that she's above everybody in her family. And she's not talking to anybody. And, you know, my mom and dad did everything for her. They even looked after her son so she could go to university in BC while her son lived in Calgary with my parents. You know, and I don't know if she paid her or whatever, but anyways, that's not the point. And they did it for her because she was finishing her university degree, becoming a teacher and an artist. So now I didn't talk to my sister since our dad passed away. I'm the oldest in the family, then she's next, then my brother, and my other siblings, my other sisters. And there's seven of us all together, but one passed away. It's going on 3 years now. And she, you know, she's still, we didn't talk till 2 years ago. She called me. So I've been talking to her, but now things are strained again because of her attitude and this COVID. She wants everybody, like her husband had a heart attack, and she wanted her, then her son went over there to Calgary, and it would be another day to travel to get to them, and which was kind of crazy for him to do in the first place, my nephew. And she was expecting her son to come over there and drive them back up north, which is a 9-hour drive in his little truck, and it would be a very tight squeeze because my cousin and my nephew, they're both big men. And I didn't see it happening, and she started telling him, well, you're going to be sorry that you didn't do this, and she's very religious, not even our religion, it's Baptist. Again, I'm apologizing to anybody out there, but it's overbearing how she's into this religion. And then she said these brothers helped them, and I said, well, you know, that's good. That's good that these brothers from the church help you, because we cannot all come there because of COVID, you know. They were placed there to help you, and I'm glad they were there. You make sure and tell them thank you from the whole family, because we were unable to come there. You know, times are different now. We can't travel. And if we travel to a different province, we're supposed to quarantine 14 days. I said, it's impossible. You know, but I'm glad they were there for you. You know, I try to tell her that. And she turned around and said that the whole family was against her, and nobody's against her. You know, I said, this is COVID. This is everybody's reality. We cannot go to our families, and, you know, I wouldn't be able to go and see my brother-in-law if I went there anyways. It would be fruitless to go there. Anyways, this is now our relationship is strained, and I do believe that the alcoholism has affected her, and she does not see it. You know, my brother knows that the alcohol affected him, and the one that passed away, she's passed away because she was into drugs and alcohol. You know, and so this brings up to, that's why I'm talking about all relationships. You know, now our relationship is not, it's frayed again. And nobody wants to tell her nobody's against you. And then she said, she took me off Facebook. She deleted me off Facebook. And then she said, well, you could talk to me on WhatsApp here. It's okay. And then she's not even speaking to me on WhatsApp. And she said, it's better that I keep my distance from the family right now. And then she said, it's when I tell my husband what's going on, what everybody's saying, it upsets my husband. And I was thinking, well, you're the one that's upsetting him because he doesn't know the whole story of what's going on. You're just hearing your part, I was thinking. And, you know, it's not two-sided. It's only one-sided. Sure, they're married and everything. And that's, you know, but it's not us that's causing him to be hurting right now, because he just had a heart attack and he had to get sprints on his heart. I think that's what he called them, sprints. So I asked, I said hi to her and how are you doing, how's everything, and she replied back, we're getting along. And that was, she didn't even say hi or anything, that's all she said. And I said, wow. You know, and like I said, nobody wants to tell her that it was her that's causing all the drama. And, you know, maybe to seek professional help about it. So I may be doing that to her. And, you know, as strained as our relationship is, I'm just going to put it to her. And what she does to it is her business. You know, I just want her to know how it's affecting us, all of us, you know. This is not the time to be blaming everybody when it's nobody's fault. And we can't help not being there because of COVID. Even though she has a drink now and then, you know, but I believe that the alcoholism, everything I witnessed, she witnessed. And I'm not sure if she even comprehends what I went through. I doubt it very much. But she was there. She was sitting, I'm not sure if she was sitting there, but I know my younger sister that passed away and my brother were sitting there, and I don't think she was sitting there when my mom, she happened to be on a bus and got off the bus and then put me on a bus and had me by the back of my hair all the way home. As soon as we got home, she told me to strip down, and I stripped down to my bra and panty, and that's all. And I was 15, and then she said, then she got a belt, and I thought she was going to strap me with the belt. Instead, she hit me with the belt buckle part all over my body. And I was crying, and she said, are you going to run away again? And I kept saying no. I don't know how many times she asked me. She would hit me, whip me with that belt buckle. And my little sister, when I passed away, Cheryl, she ran upstairs and started crying. She couldn't bear it. And I don't know how long my little brother sat there, but that's what she did to me. And I could, my body just starts stiffening up when I started talking about that, being hit with a belt buckle. You know, I don't know to this day if she remembers that. or if she was there, because I remember that my brother and my younger sister were sitting there, but I don't remember her sitting there to witness that. So I'm not sure if she even knows that my dad molested me. So those are the two hardest relationships I had with my family. And I, you know, to be put down because of my sister achieving better, and here I was going to school at the same time, and she would still be praised, and you know, I was never jealous of my sister. I'm still not jealous of her. You know, that would be crazy of me to be jealous of my sister, my own sisters, any of them, or my brother. You know, I love them very, very much. And it hurts me, it pains me to, you know, to think that somebody would even say that. And my mom did say that about me too, about my sister, and I was never jealous, never. You know, I could take a liar detector and it would find out that I'm telling the truth. You know, this is the effects of alcoholism, one of them. Blaming and not taking responsibility of what that had happened. Denying that it happened.
Do you think that some of this, I mean, while you know that this is, it causes real treacherous issues as far as your relationship with it?
Pardon? Pardon? Hello?
I'm here. I was just asking if that was the beginning of trust issues as far as relationship went for you. At such an early age, it kind of built up, and then the issues with other relationships were kind of grounded with what happened to you at home.
Oh, yes, definitely, definitely. You know, I would go into a relationship, and the one I went into as a teenager, I was in this relationship, and the man, he was older than me, 5 years older than me, and he was very mean to me. You know, he would beat me up, and, you know, I'd think, you know, this is how it is. You know, this is because I didn't know anything else. All I knew is the relationship that was in my home and with my dad and my mother. So I picked a person the same, and he had beaten me up so bad this one time, and I mentioned this too, that before, you know, and beat me black and blue and kicking me in my ribs and my back, my legs, and, you know, I could barely see out of my eyes. They were just slits. My eyes were so puffed. My face, I look like a basketball with slits on my face. And you know, we had went to my parents' house, and I told my mom that he fights me, that he beats me up. And she didn't even say nothing. She never said anything to him. She never said anything to me. She just looked at me. Like I was lying. And I felt so crushed. And I felt so alone. I always felt alone. And this is, you know, these things that my mother did were long-term. It wasn't like it happened with my dad when he molested me. This was long-term, like I was being punished forever for something that I didn't do, and I should feel bad about it, and I should feel bad about myself. And yes, so any relationship I ever had with anyone, I didn't trust them. I never trusted one person. And that would take a toll. You know, and my next relationship, that's how it was. I didn't trust him. And he ended up fighting me too. But he was fighting me to get away from me because I was fighting him. And that's how my relationship was. And my other relationships were, then the third one was the same way. The third one was worse because I would beat him up, tear his clothes up. I was very mean to him. And then after that, then I went with another alcoholic. You know, he was more alcoholic than I was because he was 10 years older than I was. And it was like he wanted to drink every day. And, you know, I wanted to be with him, so I didn't drink every day, but I was there. I'd miss out a few days, but, you know, that was too much. Then I'd have to run away from him. Then he'd find me. Then the next relationship was the same way. It was worse. Like, that one wanted to kill me. And he almost killed me. And I managed to move away from the city and the whole province altogether and move away to the next province just to get away from him. Like, he was like the devil himself. You know, he would be... you know, the how a house is built with the wood slats on the side of the house, and they're straight feet down. He could climb that to the second floor, and there's nothing to grip on that he could do that. And there he was in the window watching me and telling me to come outside. And if I was in a shelter for women, you'd find me. So I had to leave the city. I had my chance to get away. I packed up my stuff in 45 minutes, furniture, everything, clothes, in 45 minutes, and I was out of that house except his clothes. I left them in a pile. And I got away. I got away from him. That's how I got away from him. I was asking if he was at his parents' and at his mother's place, I mean, and his brother was saying, no, he's not here, and I could hear him in the background. They were drinking. And I said, well, you could tell him to stay there. And then that's when I asked my mom. She had a truck, and she could come and help me. So it took two loads. She went and dumped all my stuff in her lawn, then she came back right away, and we loaded up and I was gone. And then after that I changed, because before that, before I left, I had quit drinking for 10 months. And that's what made me leave that relationship, because I had quit drinking for 10 months and then I just did it. You know, why am I living like this? I don't have to live like this. And then I drank again after I left him for 4 months, and then that's when I quit. I just couldn't handle it anymore. I couldn't handle the things that I was thinking about when I was drinking. And I'm so happy that for that counselor that came to my rescue and stopped me from committing suicide. And again, that's when I said that I believe in dreams. And he had a dream about me saying, "Help me, help me." And when he came, that's when he asked me if I was okay, and I was drinking and thinking about how I was going to kill myself. And I was home by myself. And he asked me if I was okay, and I said, yeah. And that's when he told me he had a dream about me and what I said. Then he said, "Well, I'm going to ask you again." He said, "Are you okay?" And I said, "No," and I started crying, and I said what I was going to do. That's when he talked to me, and it didn't even seem that long when he was talking to me. And I never drank after that. After I had a sleep. And female friends. I never had female friends for a long time. The only female friends I had was when I was when I went to boarding school. Those are the ones that I one in particular, because she knows what. She believed me, and we're still friends to this day. But I had a hard time with being friends with females, and it had to do with my mother, because I didn't trust her. And I projected all this on females. I would talk to males, you know, and strike up a friendship, but not to just a platonic friendship. It's not. It wasn't anything deep. Like, I didn't tell them my deep thoughts or how I grew up or what had happened to me. I didn't tell them anything like that. It was just platonic, like friendship. Those are the kind of friendships I had with men, and they'd be friends with me. They were just drinking buddies again. And some of them have passed on. But it does affect you. How you're brought up through alcoholism, it does affect your relationships with everybody. And after I had quit drinking the second time, and I was in a relationship, and that too came to an end after I was taking therapy, because even that wasn't perfect either. Even though I wasn't drinking, it was still a relationship that stemmed from that happened when we were drinking. And I ended it. And then after that, it was... I've had three relationships since then, and I broke it off with them, because the first one is, he was a liar. Second one had drug and alcohol addictions, and I said, nah, I don't want that. And this last one was, somebody I was going with a long time ago and came into my life, and he was married and he lied to me that he wasn't with her, and anyways, I ended it also. There's lots of factors, even though he didn't drink, it was still toxic. And I would rather be by myself, and I don't have to look after anybody else, just myself and my pets. And, you know, I don't have to, I could pick out a person that's lying now, and it's really sad. I don't really want to have somebody like that in my life. And now I have really good friends that are females. I could phone any one of them and they'd be there for me in a heartbeat. You know, these are the friendships that are genuine, and they care about me and love me for who I am, and have respect for me, and I for them too. You know, those are the kind of friendships I have now. And even though I live in my community, I do stick to myself, and I do have a friend. She's a teacher. And I'm becoming more friends with the other teachers too, because I just got, this is the, going on the third year being in my community. And I really like being in a school that, where my people are, where these young people are. Mm-hmm. And I could share my stories of growing up in this community, and what is out there in the world, and what to expect, and, you know, just to how they look at people, and to be kind to people. It doesn't matter who they are. And I always tell them, this is who we were, kind people. I always remind them that of the children that are in my class that I work with. And to have integrity, to do the right thing when no one's looking. And we did have a serious talk with the students on boundaries. You know, with the teacher. The teacher was the one that had a hand in it, and then I'd help her along the way. What we told her, you know, nobody has any right to touch, lay a hand on you inappropriately or not. From cousins or uncles or aunts or anyone. So I know that there. Pardon?
I was just saying that I'm glad that's being done, because I think it's a conversation that needs to be, especially for our younger generation.
Yeah, because I was about the same age when I got molested. You know, and I, to this day, I just fear for kids that are in a home that the parents are drinking and drugging, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I hear things and it just blows my mind that parents would actually let somebody touch their children with their consent, that with the parents' consent. So this is what I heard here. So that's why I think it's, you know, it should be said. It's terrible when the kids don't have a voice. Or that nobody lets them have a voice. That's how I grew up. And to this day, you know, even, you know, I don't believe that. I don't believe in that. I believe every child has a voice. And they should speak. And they should be believed on what they say. No man or no woman is worth the silence of a child.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, everybody matters, not in this instance. Not in a situation like that. It's traumatic. And I always remind people, our people, it's only been since 1960 that Indigenous of Canada were allowed to drink. You know, then all this labeling started, drunken Indian, nothing but a drunken Indian. You know, who the heck said that? You know, that's not who we were. And
no,
those
definitely
are, not. It's ugly stereotypism.
Mm-hmm.
Stereotyping us. That's not who we were. And incest, that's not who we were. Abusing each other, that's not who we were. Yeah, so it still hurts, you know, when they talk about this. I fear for other kids. I really do. It's not only our people. It's all children.
I think society is to blame for a lot of what we're seeing now, because people just didn't take things seriously, and it's wrong. It was wrong then. It's wrong now, and something has to change. Something has to change.
Yeah, that's right. And it seems like. You know, it's more horrid now than it was when my age. But these are parents that are letting people touch their children. You know, all for drugs, all for a cheap high. You know, it's not even for alcohol. It's for pills. That's what's going on in our community. And there's children being touched by non-Indigenous from around a community that the women are letting, just for, just to go to bingo when, before COVID happened. That's really sick. That's really disturbing, and they think that nobody's seen that. A teacher seen this. She was observing, because I observe too. You know, I don't, if I'm out there, and I pretend I don't see, but I see. If I'm like that, there's other people like me too that see these things.
And it only adds to the problem.
Yeah, so that's what I was, that's why I wanted to talk about relationships. Like, it still affects me. You know, at my age, it still affects me.
Have you gotten to the point that, because I know you say you're now friends with females, and I think that's great. So you're still working through the trust thing when it comes to other women. Just being around in general.
I fully trust my friends.
Mm-hmm.
I trust them 100%. And more, you know. And I don't go and ingratiate myself to anybody, you know. When you develop a friendship, you talk and make small talk, and then you notice you have similar likes. And this older lady that I developed a friendship with, she was she's 77, and I'm helping her with language, with our language right now, because she was telling me over a year ago that she wanted to put her she teaches Ojibwe and Anishinaabe. She wanted to have a website or something, and nobody was helping her. There was a tech there, but she didn't want to help her. And so in January, I said, well, I'll help you. So I said, what about having your own channel on YouTube? She said, oh, you can do that? And I said, yeah. We'll do the videos and put them on there, and what you say, I'll print it on there. I'll help you. So we start doing that. So we're on, I can't remember. I think we just did less than eight, and we're going to go up to 20, less than 20. And anyways, her husband passed away February 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
2 years and months now. And in January, when I told her I would help her, and I said, we'll do this, we'll do that. And I said, you need a cell so we could record, and then we'll download it to YouTube and all this techie stuff. And she doesn't know how to do all that. So I helped her with that. And then I said, I'll get an iPod for your, not an iPod, what do you call those pods? You know, when you're holding a camera? A tripod. A tripod for your cell. Because I was holding it all the time. My arms were getting sore and shaky. So I said, I'll go and get a tripod for your cell. She had a new, she bought a new cell too, just for that. So I bought that for her and a USB for her lessons, because she's going to make a book out of this after her lessons. And we're going to put it in a book. And I said, you could put all your lessons on this USB and put it on your keychain, and you'll have it with you all the time. And she didn't know how to do that, so I taught her how to do that. And teaching her how to upload the videos herself and how to put her lessons into YouTube also underneath the videos. So I was teaching her all that. And when we started it, before I think it was in January, we seen her, me and this other teacher, we went and had subs and on a Sunday night, and we seen her, and she came in, and she was sitting in her vehicle crying. She was just coming to teach for the week, right? She traveled from her community. So she's still mourning her husband. And then I asked her if she was okay. I went up to her. She said, yeah, I'm okay. She said, but she just wanted to be alone, eh, and cry. So I just went back and sat down, and then she drove away. And then, anyways, I seen her at work. I asked her if she's okay. She said, yeah, I still miss my husband. She said, anyways, when we were talking about that Ojibwe lesson again, and I said I would help her. And then the next week when she was coming, she said, you know, she said, I'm not lonesome now because I'm doing something. She said, I'm doing something. And, you know, it just like her self-worth jumped out. And she said she loves her husband, but she's thinking about this more. Like she's moving on. But she said, I still miss my husband. Every once in a while she'll say that. But it's not, she said, yeah, I don't cry anymore when I come to work, when I drive to work, she said. So I've developed this friendship with her, and it's a cordial friendship. And when I tell her to, when we're going to record, and I say, okay, smile and try and look friendly, I tell her that she laughs. You know, when you're doing the video. So she smiles, and I make her smile, so she has a nice video when she's saying her words.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I'm happy that, and then I told her, you know, I really think I was put here for you. I said, to come and help you. You know, to come and help you with this, and to meet you and talk to you, because we always talk at the afternoon coffee break. You know, and she waits for me to come to the coffee room. You know. And she tells me she feels better, you know. And that that warms my heart, you know, that I'm helping somebody, just being there and listening to her and helping her. So I really value my friendships that I do make, and everything for a reason, bad or good.
Well, I think you're a great person, and it shows. In the things that you do, you've come a long way, and I think that, you know, just to get through the things that you have, and then come on here and talk about it, it's just amazing, and I'm really honored to be able to listen.
Well,
to what you say, you know, when you tell your story about what happened and everything. And I'm just honored that you come on and you take the time to share that with me and everybody else that's listening in.
Yeah, thank you for having me on here. You know, like
you're
I said, it
welcome.
Would be, it will turn out different mm-hmm. than what I said the last three times. So I encourage sober Indians to come on here also to talk about it. You know, it might not be the things that you release, what you say is good. You know, no matter how traumatic it was, you know, it's just like facing those words and dealing with them and saying it out in the open so others can hear your story. They may be going through the same thing and need to hear what you're saying and possibly going to tell someone like a therapist or a counselor and dealing with those thoughts inside your head and not allowing that to take over your body and your head. By that I mean to make you sick, to develop some kind of disease or illness within yourself. You know, you have to release that. The mind is so tricky. It's very tricky. And then the body listens. And the first one to hear those thoughts is your body. Or whatever you say to someone, if it's negative. Yeah, so is our time up yet already?
Oh, yeah, we actually went over a little bit, but that's okay.
Oh, I see. Sorry. I'm thinking, oh,
don't worry about it.
Must be almost
because,
time.
Yeah, we had a lot, to, you know, I think, you know, there was a lot that you wanted to say, and I wasn't about to stop you, you know, at that hour mark, so I just let it go. But I'm very, very grateful that you came on and talked and shared everything that you did, and you're going to have to come back on again, because I'm joined with you, Peter. A lot of it is difficult for me to hear, but I do enjoy listening to you talk. So.
Well, to be good for having me on here, Karen.
You're very welcome. And I want to thank everybody for joining in with tonight and wish everybody a good night.
Yeah. Good night, everyone.
See everybody on Wednesday.
Okay, good night, Karen.
Good night.